At a time when most of his Jewish contemporaries aspired to blend unassumingly into the English gentry, Montefiore's proud desire to display his Jewishness in public was socially daring, perhaps even shocking. To say simply that he was not ashamed of his origins does not go nearly far enough. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 147, The Quest of Sir Moses Montefiore. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In 1827, a wealthy Sephardic Jew from London arrived in Jerusalem. This man, whose name was Moses Montefiore, would go on to become the most famous member of the British Jewish community in the Victorian era, a philanthropist who would profoundly impact the Jewish world and Jerusalem, the sacred city. At a time when Jews were not allowed to sit in Parliament, he, Montefiore, was appointed as one of the two sheriffs of London and was knighted by Queen Victoria. But most interestingly of all this came after a life-changing journey to Jerusalem. Indeed, one might say it was a quest, a spiritual quest, thus reversing the usual order of the story of knights. In the medieval tradition, a young man might be knighted and then journey to engage in a knightly quest. Moses Montefiore, in contrast, went on a profoundly spiritual quest and only then was knighted. This hints to us that he was unique, and his life is a unique story in the larger tale of the unique city that is Jerusalem. Born in 1784 in Livorno, Montefiore came to England from Italy as a young man. He became a member of the Sephardic, Spanish, and Portuguese Jewish community, and he married Judith Cohen, and he ultimately went into finance with his brother-in-law, Nathan Mayer Rothschild, achieving enormous wealth. Moses Montefiore was always observant, but faith, following his journey to Jerusalem, became incredibly central to his life. It all began one Saturday night during the ritual bidding farewell to the Sabbath known as Havdalah. Many sing about Elijah the prophet at the Sabbath's end, linked to the fact that it is this prophet who is destined to announce the redemption. Suddenly, Moses' wife Judith expressed a sudden longing to visit the Holy Land and to see Mount Carmel, where Elijah had his famous standoff against the prophets of Baal. That evening, Moses Montefiore had a vision, one which impacted him forever, one which he memorialized with a piece of jewelry. Abigail Green, in her fascinating biography of Montefiore, to which this episode is indebted, writes as follows, quote, "Every week, after performing the ritual that marks the end of the Sabbath, the Montefiores, like all Sephardim, read a hymn in honor of the prophet Elijah, whose task it is to announce the coming of the Messiah. On one such Saturday evening, Montefiore and Judith fell to talking about the good news of which this prophet's appearance was to be the harbinger for Jerusalem. What fun it would be, they thought, to visit Mount Carmel and see the very spot where Elijah had confounded the priests of Baal. Many years later, an elderly Montefiore showed his nephew Leonard a simple gold ring engraved with the Hebrew words, Koneh HaKol, meaning possessor of all things. Montefiore told Leonard how, that night, I dreamed I saw in front of me a venerable man whom I knew to be Elijah the prophet. He pointed to Jerusalem, which I recognized in the distance, and said, only those two words engraved upon my ring. I awoke, and then dreamt this a second time, and then a third time, each time hearing only the words, Koneh HaKol. And the dream made so strong an impression upon me that I resolved the very first thing I would do when I had time would be to go to the Holy Land." End quote. Koneh HaKol, creator and owner of all. This is our description of the Almighty in the silent prayer, the Amidah. God, we say, is the creator of all creation, therefore the possessor of all creation. The Sabbath, of course, reminds us of this fact. And the reference to Elijah in this transformative vision is fascinating. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, in his book, The Lonely Man of Faith, describes the deeper meaning to the story in the Book of Kings of Elisha, who was a prosperous farmer when suddenly Elijah came by and placed his cloak on Elisha. And suddenly a changed person, the new disciple of the prophet, slaughtered his cattle and fed it to the people. Or as Rabbi Soloveitchik put it, quote, "While he was engaged in the most ordinary everyday activity in tilling the soil, he encountered God and felt the transforming touch of God's hand. The strangest metamorphosis occurred. Within seconds, the old Elisha disappeared and a new Elisha emerged." End quote. Elisha is changed by Elijah, and perhaps that is part of why we remember Elijah, the prophet, at the end of Shabbat, because the Sabbath reminds us how to approach everything in our lives It is, as it were, the cloak of the prophet placed upon us, transforming us, inspiring us. Such a transformation certainly took place for the Montefiores on that end of the Sabbath. They did indeed take a long trip toward the Holy Land, arriving in Jerusalem, which was then a very, very small city. As Abigail Green tells us further, quote, "Jerusalem in 1827 was a shabby, tumble-down place of crumbling stone walls and arches, of winding lanes and passageways. From a distance, it looked impressive, a city of domes and fortresses rising out of a rocky, mountainous landscape. The dry, dusty country relieved only by olive trees and the ruins of ancient graves, but the majestic city walls concealed a backwater inhabited by fewer than 15,000 people, moldering away quietly in a forgotten corner of the Ottoman Empire. The streets appear to European visitors to be overflowing with the rubble of centuries, stones, earth, ashes, bits of pottery, bones, and wood. The city's inhabitants felt no compunction about burying the contents of their latrines in the middle of the street. Piles of rubbish were simply left to rot, while Jerusalemites dragged the carcasses of horses, donkeys, and camels outside the walls to be devoured by dogs and jackals." End quote. And yet, despite all this, the experience of Jerusalem overwhelmed the Montefiores. And soon after, Moses Montefiore made a promise to God that reflected itself throughout his life. As Green tells us, the promise was as follows, quote, "I humbly pray to the God of my forefathers, my God, the one, only true God, to grant that I may henceforth become a more righteous and better man, as well as better Jew, and that I may daily be more deserving of his abundant mercies, that I may, to the end of my days, be guarded and directed by his almighty providence. And when it pleases him to take me from this world, may he graciously receive my soul, pardon and forgive my iniquities, support and comfort my dear, dear wife. This day I begin a new era. I fully intend to dedicate much more time towards the welfare of the poor and to attend as regularly as possible on Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, synagogue." End quote. The man who had read of Elijah at the end of the Sabbath, who had had a vision of Elijah that night, suddenly, seemingly, as it were, had the cloak of Elijah over him. He became, in some sense, changed. He dedicated the rest of his public life to the well-being of his Jewish brethren, establishing, as we will see, some of the prominent efforts in the 19th century by Jews in the land of Israel. And he worked as well, as we will also see, on behalf of persecuted Jews everywhere. And, as episodes in the future will describe, Montefiore returned to Jerusalem and played a very important role in its future. For now, let us conclude by describing what happened after the 1827 visit to Jerusalem. On the journey back, a storm hit. Apparently, some Jews would travel with a bit of the afikoman, the hidden piece of matzah from the Passover Seder, as an omen of safe travel. Green cites Montefiore, who writes that he, during the storm, quote, "threw into the sea a piece of my Passover cake, at the time praying to God to preserve us as he had in old time preserved our forefathers from the turbulence of the sea, and in his great mercy to grant us a fair wind sufficient for our purpose," end quote. Green further explains that, quote, "according to some traditions, breaking the middle matzah into two halves symbolized the parting and crossing of the Red Sea. The afikoman is the better part of this middle matzah, and so, when a piece is thrown into the sea remembers God's promise of saving those who sail on from danger." The gesture certainly seemed to work for the Montefiores. That night, for the first time in more than a week, they enjoyed a fine moonlight evening with a smooth sea, end quote. Arriving back in England, Montefiore was appointed a sheriff of London, and he ensured that he would never forget the sacred city he had seen. Abigail Green, again, quote, "Back in London, Montefiore resumed his business activities, but he did not forget his trip to Jerusalem. 2 years later, he sought to commemorate the experience by requesting the Duke of Norfolk, hereditary marshal of England, to grant him such an addition to his crest as he may perpetuate the remembrance of the said visit to the Holy City, and as may be proper to be borne by your memorialist and his descendants, and by the other descendants of his said late father according to the laws of arms. In such a formal document," Green continues, "it is surprising and oddly touching to find mention of the arduous journey he undertook, accompanied by his beloved wife, in pursuit of their anxious desire to visit the city of Jerusalem in the holy land of their forefathers. The Duke of Norfolk responded by incorporating three banners emblazoned with the Hebrew word Jerusalem into the Montefiore coat of arms," end quote. And Green adds, quote, "Sometimes we may find it hard to reconcile the two faces of Montefiore, the successful city businessman who cracked open a bottle of champagne at the pyramids to toast success to the Alliance and Marine and Sam Gurney, and the religious Jew who used his afikoman to quiet the troubled waters and traveled all the way to Jerusalem after a prophetic dream. The Montefiore coat of arms reminds us that for Montefiore, these aspects of his personality were complementary. At a time when most of his Jewish contemporaries aspired to blend unassumingly into the English gentry, Montefiore's proud desire to display his Jewishness in public was socially daring, perhaps even shocking. To say simply that he was not ashamed of his origins does not go nearly far enough, end quote. Montefiore, then, was a proud participant in British public affairs, and he was an incredibly proud Jew. And his pride in his heritage was to become even more manifest when he was granted a knighthood by Queen Victoria, and, as Green writes, Montefiore said that his family members had suggested that he change his name to go with his knighthood, saying, quote, they all said Sir Moses would sound so very bad. I told them, Moses I was and Moses I'd remain. I had lived Moses and I'd die Moses. And if I don't hurt the name won't hurt me, end quote. And as Green also tells us, when he heard the words of the queen saying, rise, Sir Moses, he thought of the sacred city, reflecting, quote, I cannot express all I felt on this occasion. I had, besides, the pleasure of seeing my banner with Jerusalem floating proudly in the hall, end quote. Thus did Moses Montefiore's journey bring about a reversal of the standard way the knightly tale is told in Britain. He, Moses, had gone on his quest, and then he became a knight. And there is a point here. It was Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik who spoke of the heroes of the Tanakh by utilizing the Kierkegaardian term, the knight of faith. We will again meet this man, Moses Montefiore, who incorporated Jerusalem into his crest, the man who impacted Jerusalem profoundly. And inspired by well-known jokes, if I may be permitted the obvious rabbinic pun, I will conclude by saying that as we learn about Sir Moses, we will see why this night was different from all other nights. This is Meir Soloveitchik wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Looking forward to learning together next week. Sani Love.